Okay.
She's doing it. There we go.
All right. So the Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development come to order. Our first meeting, January 15th. Thanks, everybody, for being here. I'm excited about what we're about to undertake and eager to have your participation and guidance. We have a pretty short agenda today as far as the formal rules and introductions and so on, and then we'll have a presentation from the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department directors just walking in, so we appreciate that. I want to, I think, first start with the rules and then move to introductions. And these, of course, the rules that you have in front of you are the same for all of the committees in the House, should be familiar to you. And the only significant difference from rules that the returners are probably familiar with are contained, I think, in 16. It has to do with minority reports. So I highlight that. You probably have already heard the explanation about that, that minority reports need to be submitted as, or at least distributed as LC amendments, unless the work session is occurring within 24 hours of the public hearing. So if there's any discussion about that, about the rules, I'd be happy to hear that. And not seeing any, I would be happy to entertain a motion to adopt the rules.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Witt moves the adoption of the committee rules. And if there's no discussion on that, I'll ask if there are any objections to the adoption of the rules. Seeing none.
I just have a question.
Representative Patrick.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. If, speaking on the minority reports, if we were to present LC drafts to you, are you going to then distribute them to among the members so that it has been put before the committee?
Thank you, Representative Thatcher. That would certainly be my intent, to allow people to have that opportunity.
Okay.
It's also easy for me to imagine that a bill under discussion might generate some amendments that could be deemed appropriate by the majority of the committee and adopted as part of the bill. So my hope is that that will stimulate good discussion and improvements of the bill, but I would certainly welcome those.
Okay,
so
good.
Appreciate
Thank
the
you.
Comment. You bet. Any further discussion or objections to the rules? If not, we'll consider those adopted. And given that this is our first meeting and a new committee, I just wanted to take a quick second and say something about why I'm excited about this and why I think this is a good group to begin the discussions. And I think the governor said it nicely in his State of the State earlier this week, and talked about the fact that we have for a long time thought of the economy and the environment as separate and conflicting concerns. And while that's sometimes true, I think there's some really significant opportunities for us to build the economy in ways that support the environment. There are a lot of those kinds of issues before us. I think we'll have a wide-ranging set of issues that we'll get to focus on. I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on that as well. And as our first meeting, I also thought we could go down the dais here and introduce ourselves briefly for each other's benefit, for the benefit of those in the audience, and perhaps on the web who might be listening as well. Some of you, I sent out an email last week when the makeup of the committee was a little bit different, so some of you may not have gotten it. But in that email, I mentioned that there are a lot of different definitions of sustainability, and asked people to think about what their own definition is. And it's in your introduction. If you have any thoughts about that, I'd be interested in hearing it. And just to start the discussion, I should introduce myself too. I'm Tobias Reed. I represent District 27, which is southwest, a little bit of southwest Portland, mostly Beaverton and some unincorporated Washington and Multnomah counties. And the definition for sustainability that has stuck with me came from an economics class in college, where we talked about behaving sustainably meant making choices that didn't constrain the choices available to the future. So I'd be pretty interested in what you think about those things. We have a list of some issues that I've been thinking about that might come before us, and I'd be happy to add anything that is before it is on your mind about what might be in the purview of this committee. So maybe we'll start with Representative Holby, a little introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Paul Holvey from District 8, which is South Eugene, Vanita, Lorraine, Crow, and Notai. Sustainability, I didn't get the email.
I'm glad you're a recent addition to our committee.
You know, certainly I think sustainability is making sure that whatever we're using today, that we might be able to use it tomorrow, too.
Thank you. Representative Gilliam, deep in thought.
Yes, always am when my colleague speaks. Vic Gilliam from District 18, Silverton, Mullala, Mount Angel. And I'd say the synonym that I like anyway for sustainability, which can be sustainability, can be quite a buzzword, but nonetheless one I'm glad you've chosen for this committee at this time in our tough session, is the synonym would be strategic. I think it. My thoughts on it are similar to yours. You know, the money that may or may not come our way from Washington needs to be spent strategically. We can find lots of places for it, but it's got to be strategic.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. State Representative Brad Witt. My district is House District 31, and it runs along the Columbia River from Sobeys Island, which is just north of Portland, on out to Astoria. And as far south as the community of Vernonia. Lots of woods and mountains in between the highway and Vernonia. It was also our district that was hit extremely hard with the recent snowfall. In terms of sustainability, I was fortunate, having served two terms on our state's Board of Forestry, to have studied sustainability under then State Forester Jim Brown. And it truly was an epiphany for me in terms of having come out of the forest products industry and fought in a number of the timber battles over a couple of decades. And it was a new way of looking at things. And I've come to the conclusion that when you try and sustain anything economically, socially, environmentally, I'm also increasingly convinced that there's a fourth leg, which is political sustainability. That when we accommodate all of those, then we help assure that none of us is a short-time winner and long-time loser. So that's my view on sustainability.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative Cliff Bentz from District 60, which is 26,000 square miles of our wonderful state, about a quarter of it, maybe a little more than that. The sustainability concepts are hugely interesting to me because of the natural resource aspect of the area I represent. But also, I spent 8 years on the Water Resource Commission, and many of those lengthy debates had to do with all aspects of the use of water and the need to be cognizant of how rare and lucky a place Oregon is to have the types of environmental attributes that we enjoy. And the mesh between trying to make a living out in one of the poorest parts of the state on the one hand and the environment on the other, hugely interesting to me. So I am really looking forward to being on this committee, and I'm very, very happy to have been appointed to it.
Barbara, would you like to introduce yourself to
Yes,
please?
Barbara Allen. I am the administrator for this committee.
You want to say anything more about your history and how you came to join us?
Certainly. I'd be happy to.
Helpful to know our backgrounds and so on.
Right. I'm someone who has been in the political arena for many, many years. And most recently, I have been involved with Oregon 150, which is the organization putting on our Oregon's 150th birthday, as well as being the executive director for the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial. So I was kind of like the ultimate party planner for the state for a while. So.
Bodes well for our end of session gathering.
There
perhaps.
You have it. I'll be see you at sunny day.
Thank you. Representative Galizio.
Larry Galizio, House District 35, which is City of Tigard, King City, Southwest Portland by Portland Community College, Sylvania campus, and unincorporated Washington County, kind of southeastern unincorporated Washington County, Bull Mountain area. And I won't hazard a guess, I won't hazard a definition of sustainability. I wanted to thank the chair for the book that I'm now reading, Hot, Flat, and Crowded, I believe is the title, which could have described the last meeting that I was in, but I'm excited to be on this committee. I'm very interested in higher education and the extent to which, you know, recently Portland State University received about a $25 million gift focusing primarily, you know, on sustainability, and I think we are well positioned, and the choices we make here and in other venues could position us even better in terms of the research and development and creating jobs and having an economic development strategy that is geared toward what we would, a lot of us would say is more sustainability. So I'm excited to broach those issues, and I'm really looking forward to probably having a very different understanding of sustainability by the end of this session.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher.
Hi, I'm Representative Thatcher. I represent Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh, District 25, for those who care to hear the number. I am, as of yesterday, a new appointee to this committee, and I haven't had a whole lot of time. Didn't see the email either, so.
Understood.
I'm just kind of here to observe right now and figure out which direction we're trying to go, and then I might have some suggestions for you, so to improve upon things, in my opinion. So.
Hope so. Thank
hopefully.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Jules Bailey from Inner East Side Portland, the Hawthorne-Belmont Division neighborhoods up to the freeway there. And I'm looking forward to the opportunity to learn from all of my colleagues here, and I really like what I've heard to add something if it's valuable. I see sustainability as replacing or enhancing capital at equal to or greater than the rate of depreciation. And the important thing is how we measure what capital is, that it's human capital, it's social capital, it's natural capital, in addition to our understanding of traditional physical capital investments. And at the end of the day, it's all about quality of life.
Thank you. I think that's a great place to start. Lots of different interpretations and versions of sustainability, and we'll look forward to continuing to refine those. The other half, of course, of the name of our committee is economic development, so I thought it would be appropriate for us to start with an introduction to some of the economic development activities that are already happening in the state, and so I'd invite Tim McCabe, our director of the OECDD, the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, up. He's perhaps bring some colleagues and give us a bit of an introduction to the activities of the department. There's a lot going on there, and a good place for us probably to start understanding what's currently going on. So, Mr. McCabe, thanks for coming. Welcome.
And, thanks, Jerry.
We're happy to hear from you.
For the record, I'm Tim McCabe. I'm director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. And just to give you some background on me, from 1997 through 2006, for the 10-year period, I was manager of economic development for PacifiCorp. That's the Pacific Power and Light here. It's six western states. It's now owned by American Energy Holdings out of Iowa, a Warren Buffett company, a subsidiary of Berkshire Hathaway. In June of 2006, the governor asked me to come and join his staff to advise him on economic development. I went on loan during his election year. I was on loan to the governor's office to help advise him on economic development strategies going into the election. Once the governor was elected, he asked me to stay on, which I gladly did because I think he's a fantastic leader. And since then, in May of this year, he appointed me as director of the department. So that gives you some background. So I've got an extensive background from the private sector around economic development, and I think that's served me very well over the years. I really appreciate the opportunity to come before you today to provide an update on the department and the things we've accomplished over the last 8 months, as well as where we plan to take the agency in the future. During the interim, the department has been involved with a significant realignment project that began in May, as I stated, following the governor's executive order that called for a separation of the agency's business and community development functions. The goal of the project was to work with our partners to better position the agency and its programs to be more effective for the state and our customers. An executive team from the department has traveled the state to better learn what was, and more importantly, what wasn't working within the agency and the programs we administer. From Medford to Baker to Portland, our team traveled to 9 cities in 12 days to meet with stakeholders to get their feedback on the department. A number of issues and items were discussed, but through it all we heard a common theme. The agency needed to be more focused, strategic, and accountable in its work to further economic development and create jobs across the state. As will be discussed in greater detail, what we are presenting today are recommendations from the Commission to the Governor that ultimately resulted in legislation for the 2009 session. These recommendations provide a solid foundation for the distinct functions of the Department to better serve all Oregonians. Now more than ever, the Department and State play an integral role in how we address economic challenges. We must be more strategic in how we invest our limited resource to ensure the very best return on our investment. This involves continuing our partnerships with existing Oregon companies to retain and expand job opportunities, marketing targeted investments in those industries where we have a competitive advantage, and incorporating innovation into the state's long-term strategic plan so we are poised to hit the ground running when we emerge from the current economic downturn. Thank you again for the opportunity to come before you today. I look forward to answering any questions you may have regarding this report. And I'd like to turn it over to Paul Grove, our Government Relations Manager for the Department.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paul Grove, and as Tim noted, I'm the Government Relations Manager for the Department. I won't belabor what Tim mentioned about the realignment project, other than to note that one of the first things that we sought to do was to engage our stakeholders out there and to, you know, evaluate the programs, and as Tim noted, what was going well and what wasn't going well. Following that piece, we formed targeted work groups around the particular program areas to evaluate the programs in greater detail and provide alternatives for the commission to help them in the recommendations that they ultimately presented to the governor. I'll try and be brief, and I'll just highlight a few of those recommendations that served as the basis for the legislation that Tim mentioned. The first recommendation involved moving the Oregon Main Street program from the department to the Department of Parks and Recreation State Historic Preservation Office. The premise of the Main Street program is to encourage economic development within the context of historic preservation. It seemed to make a lot of sense from a mission perspective, and this is something that Parks and Recreation endorsed. The second recommendation involved a request from Department of Consumer and Business Services to move the Office of Minority-Owned, Women-Owned, Emerging Small Business Certification Program from DCBS to the department. And the premise around this was there were same customers that were being served and to have a central location, a one-stop location for small business services. The third recommendation that went forward would establish an Infrastructure Finance Authority Board within the department, and this board would be responsible for the administration of the department's infrastructure and public works programs, the water wastewater program, the Special Public Works Fund, the Port Revolving Loan Fund, as well as have oversight over our federally administered programs, Community Development Block Grant, and the Safe Drinking Water Loan Fund as well. We recognized, and the commission recognized, that these programs are critical to the maintenance of infrastructure around the state. But that said, and as we learned through the process, the combination of these programs with the department's business retention, expansion, and recruitment activities create a lot of confusion as to the mission of the department. And oftentimes, some of these infrastructure projects that were pure infrastructure projects were being measured against a job creation total. And it was very, like I said, it created a lot of confusion as to what we were doing. So we think that the creation of this Infrastructure Finance Authority Board will provide a more strategic focus on program delivery as well as program prioritization. And within this IFA board, one of the goals was to establish an asset management system around the state's infrastructure programs and to incorporate sustainable development design to improve the long-term life cycle of these systems so the state gets a better return on its investment for these projects. Within the board, as it's currently drafted, it would be governor-appointed, and it would include public works experts, public finance experts, as well as those stakeholder groups that have a vested interest in the success of these programs and these systems. And the fourth recommendation would revolved around having a more strategic focus on the department's business retention, expansion, and recruitment activities. It would include anything from the role of our business development officers out in the field to the incorporation of innovation into our long-term business development strategy, as well as providing assistance and access to international markets for Oregon companies. I think for this committee, the new mission statement that we that was adopted by the commission is very appropriate, and I'll just read it in brief. It says, to enable the creation, retention, expansion, and attraction of businesses that provide sustainable living wage jobs for Oregonians through public-private partnerships, leverage funding, and support economic opportunities for Oregon companies and entrepreneurs. I also feel that this new mission statement allows the agency to focus its activities on sound strategies as well as utilize the commission's specialized expertise in a wide variety of business and industry activities. With that, I appreciate the opportunity to come before you. Those are, again, some key recommendations that resulted from the reorganization, and be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Thanks for being here and for your comments. Are there questions from the committee? New stuff. Yeah, Representative Witt, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just curious what wage range the department is using for living wages.
Chair Reed, Representative Witt, we come before you today, that definition is still yet to be defined.
Thank you.
If I may add, Chair Reed, please. Representative Witt, members of the committee, what we do when we're talking to new businesses coming into the state, any incentives that they have to be the prevailing wage in that part of the state with a percentage over that. Usually, look, before we give them any money, it's 150% of the prevailing wage in that area. So, you know, in order for them to qualify for incentives, there are those clawbacks.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Other questions? Representative Thatcher.
I seem to remember that there was some sort of a legislative investigation, or not investigation, maybe that's not the right word, something about investigating and showing where the money that was spent by OECDD on different programs, what it actually yielded as far as jobs, basically a follow-the-money type of thing. What actually did we get for spending X amount of dollars in grants or loans? Do we have any sort of numbers on that? I'd be kind of curious to follow up on that.
Sure. Chair Reed, Representative Thatcher, and we could provide you with this information. There was a I believe you're speaking to a budget note that was assigned to the department from the 2007 legislative session, and what the department was required to produce was an incentive report, and what the return on the investment was for those particular incentives, and that was actually submitted in December, and we can provide you a copy of that report if you'd like.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious to the extent that these business development officers are helping businesses integrate with applicable workforce development programs and the integration with the workforce agencies and programs here in the state.
Thank you. Could you repeat the question? You're asking how they are, or
sure. I'm asking if they are, and if so, what's is that mechanism there? I don't see workforce specifically listed in this list of things that the business development officer is doing, potentially for demand-driven workforce development.
Chair Reed, Representative Bailey, in the and members of the committee, in the last legislative session, we had put in the governor's budget $15 million around workforce for existing Oregon businesses to help, working closely with existing Oregon businesses to help train their employees. And what came out of that was we ended up with $1.5 million. We utilized that and we put it out on a bid basis around the state, around specific industries, to identify workforce needs in those industries, and we awarded those bids. We're waiting for the results of that. In this session, all the workforce money is going through the community college. To my knowledge, we don't have any in our budget now, but we are putting we're asking for 1.5 full-time employees to work with existing Oregon budget businesses to help identify their workforce needs, so we can go to the community college and help the businesses to, as I said, identify those needs and hopefully procure that money.
Other questions? Representative Blasio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's kind of a big picture question, Director McCabe. Reading the mission statement of the department, as policymakers on this committee, could you tell us what do you see as the greatest obstacles that we have, meaning Oregon, that we have to fulfilling this mission statement, things that we can control to some degree?
Chair Reed, Representative Galizio, members of the committee, I think that's a very good question. I don't think the obstacles we face are unique to Oregon. Okay, the things we're seeing today, the things that are making it difficult for small businesses, are access to capital. Okay, and that the way we address that in our department is through our loan guarantees programs. We're enabling the banks to loan this money, but we're guaranteeing those loans for small business. The other biggest obstacle we're faced with, and Representative Bailey addressed it in his question, is workforce training. And I'll give you an example, and Representative Reed has heard me talk about this, but it's one of my favorite subjects. We have a company in Newburgh, Oregon. It's called Climax Power Tools. They hired 56 people last year. They could have hired 20 more, you know, if they could have found them. So those are the obstacles we're faced with for creating these jobs. These jobs are out there. You know, you hear about the unemployment. That's what gets reported, but there's enormous job opportunities for Oregonians, but they're not trained. So, in answer to your question, I think that's the biggest obstacle we're faced with in this state.
I can build on that question a little bit, and I hope there are others still. What would you say is the relationship between the retention of existing Oregon businesses and hopefully the expansion of those businesses versus innovation, new businesses, new industries, and how are you managing those things in your activities?
Chair Reed, members of the committee, again, that's a very good question. The Oregon Innovation Council has developed a number of great programs over the last 6 years during the governor's tenure. ONAMI, you know, we've all heard the acronyms, what they all mean. My favorite, OTRADI, the Oregon Translational Research and Drug Development Institute. As I said, BEST, which is around wave technology. We need to, ONAMI's been the longest standing one, and their research has been incorporated into many businesses in Oregon. We haven't done a good job of telling that story, how existing Oregon businesses have benefited from this innovation. And in answer to your question, I think we need to take a much closer look at what's happening here in Oregon, not just those programs, but how, as I say, they're benefiting existing Oregon industries because they are, and start telling that story better. Because we've got some phenomenal things going on in this state, and nobody knows it.
We'll look forward to helping you tell that story. Okay. There, other questions for Representative Holby?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for being here and getting us started. It is always good to hear from the economic development side of the world. My question specifically is, you know, aimed at, you know, the infrastructure and the stimulus package that we're looking at potentially we hear about coming from the federal government. And I guess my question really is, how is the state of Oregon positioned, or do we have resources that are looking at, different places and different resources that we can leverage coming from the federal government largely?
and where we can match funds and actually, you know, increase our ability to get jobs moving in the state of Oregon. And do we have, you know, a systematic way of looking at what's coming from the feds, and how does that interaction take place?
Very good question. Chair Reed and Representative Holvey, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to bring my deputy director up, Lynn Chesler.
Please.
Because Lynn's been in charge of this for us. And Lynn came to the department from the to OECDD, Oregon Economic Community Development Department, from Housing and Community Services. And Lynn's got an extensive background in working with communities throughout the state and in federal programs. That's why he's been a great asset around this stimulus package. With that, I'll turn it over to Lynn.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Lynn Chesler, the Deputy Director for the department. The challenge of your question in responding to how we are as a state responding to the issues out there is nobody really knows what the stimulus money is going to be. So at this point, it's a fairly broad approach, but it's in partnership with most of those agencies or entities out there that have the list of projects. So we've worked closely with the counties, and we've worked closely with the cities as they've inventoried their membership to come up with a very long list. And I think the total of the projects on that list now approaches something like $1 billion. But it is an inventory of roads, water lines, sewer lines, public buildings, all those things that in theory create, you know, the construction jobs that we're trying to achieve. What we're doing specifically related to our department, predictably there's going to be money coming through the Safe Drinking Water Program. That's a partnership we have with the Department of Human Services, and we expect there's going to be a sizable amount of money come through, because that seems to be one of the focuses of the Obama administration related to green activities and certainly showing up community ability to service their communities with clean water and expand the water supply. So in that particular case, we are, based upon the list of water projects the cities have generated, we are recontacting those cities now to make sure that their project that is viable within the next 90 or 120 days gets a letter of intent to us. That's a trigger that we use to get their name placed on a list. That list window closes the 2nd of February, so we're going to get all the communities we can on that list and prepared. Once we have a dollar figure, knowing what that program will be able to provide in the state, we'll be able to contact those communities and get the ball rolling immediately.
In addition, we've, Chair Reed and Representative Holvey and members of the committee, we're working closely with the Department of Human Services to create a rapid permitting process where these projects will go right to the front of the line. You know, so we can identify those permits ahead of time, which we're doing now, and putting that process in place, because we know that oftentimes that's one of the biggest slowdowns in any of this stuff. And we're also, they're talking to the unions and that, and the workers. Our concern is that once all this money comes forth, we're not going to have enough contractors to do all the work that could be undertaken. So we're looking at a temporary licensing process, where we can start temporary licensing some contractors to do this work. Because, again, if we don't do it, we lose those funds, and we know that. So,
Representative Holby, you had a follow-up?
Follow-up, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one further question that was in my mind about that. Do we, and when you're talking about inventorying the list that we have, do we also, are we inventorying a list of projects that may have already secured federal funding that are just sitting waiting for match monies and trying to figure out how that may be able to, that match money may be able to be reduced by potential more federal money or just prioritizing that because it's already got money sitting there for it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holvey, indeed, we do have a list of those projects and we're ready to go. The irony of this situation is somewhere along the way, the assumption was made that a lot of this stimulus money was going to be grant money. And so frankly, there are projects that are ready to go, but the communities are reluctant to get their applications completed simply because they want to wait for the best deal. I think shortly after the complete revelation of what the stimulus money will be, the programs they go to, and the terms of that money, then we'll see more applications coming to full completion and we'll be able to move forward with them. Because I think it's going to be largely loan money, not grant money, as was hoped.
Thank you. Representative Gilliam, I think I saw your hand next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for being here. It's good to see you again.
Yeah.
I wanted to go back to, I think it was a reference with regard to Representative Bailey's question on this whole workforce situation. I'm interested in if you'd say a little more about our connection with our existing community college network in the state and what we're doing to work with them. There's some outstanding folks there, as you well know. The faculties are stellar. And just would like to know more about how the two departments, I shouldn't say departments, but your department and that network are working on workforce.
Chair Reed, Representative Gilliam, members of the committee, that's a very good question. And what we're doing, we're working with Cam Prius's group. We're concentrating our efforts because we have limited amount of people. Okay, we work with existing Oregon businesses, and we work on lean manufacturing and ways that we can help them, and with community colleges in the area to identify their workforce need. But we're also working very closely with community colleges on new workforce needs. By that I mean with the emerging solar and wind industry in Oregon, we're seeing new opportunities for training. And a good example is down in the Dalles. We work very closely with the community college in the Dalles to create a program around wind turbine maintenance, okay, through our department and in conjunction with community colleges and the utilities, okay. It's now a nationally recognized program. They hold seminars out there training it. We're in the process of doing the same. We did that, one of those with PCC, working with Portland Community College around silicon manufacturing process. We created a training program closely. We brought the community college in with the new company, Soleix, designed a program with the customer. The customer designs the program, and the community college implements it. So that's how our two departments are working closely together. But it's more around new opportunities than existing business. We look for it in existing business as we find it, but we're trying to capitalize on the new opportunities and create those opportunities for workers.
Thank you. Representative Benz, I think I had you next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Director, thank you for being here, and thank you for taking the time to come out to Baker City, where I think I saw you last.
Yeah,
appreciate
that.
That was
the last time.
This exercise of distribution of federal funds prompts me to think about the prioritization you folks must do in the department, trying to figure out where best to focus your energies and the state's money. And this has been a conversation that's been going on in the four counties I represent. Each one's formed a little economic group to try to determine what might be done with those monies if they show up. But I'm curious how, in light of the sustainability conversation that we're having, the department has prioritized what it's going to spend the money on. Is there a list? And if so, does that list, what does that list reference? The word sustainable is pretty simple to put in here, and I see it. But what's that? Where's the list that tells us which right. of your projects is the best one to meet that sustainable standard?
Or just to build on that, perhaps, Representative Benz, what might be the criteria?
Exactly.
Right.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benz, first of all, we have to distinguish between our business programs and the infrastructure programs. And on the infrastructure side, I can speak to that. We do indeed have a prioritization schedule. Every project that comes into the department, we have a rating sheet. We look at it, and I can provide you a copy of that, but we numerically score the project, and they have to meet, in the case of the infrastructure projects, a 90-point threshold, or they don't even get considered. But anywhere from 90 points to 115, I believe, is the maximum. We look at the project and score it. We look at our resources. Now, with the federal money that's coming through, I think it's safe to say it will go through the federal programs that are already established. And in that particular case, as I mentioned, the Safe Drinking Water Program, the federal program has its own priorities, and we will implement those priorities with the superseding factor of ability to proceed immediately.
description. Oh,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. To follow that up, the element or prompt in most of the conversations in my four counties has been one of urgency and, frankly, fear of the challenges imposed upon us by the current economic situation. Does your checklist, would you suggest any modifications to that checklist as a result of our current economic situation?
That's a very good question, Mr. Chair and Representative Benz. Our infrastructure projects have two qualifying or scoring sides to each consideration of each project, whether it addresses a health and safety concern in the community that will be alleviated by funding the project, such as replacing the water source supply or the treatment system. The other side of it is indeed an economic vitality factor for the community. Your suggestion is that maybe we should re-examine how much we weight those economic vitality factors in order to boost a community's ability to be economically responsive to opportunities. And I think that's a strong suggestion that we may want to take into consideration indeed.
Would it be fair to say that those kinds of factors represent sort of a tiebreaker after the scoring is done? Or how would you characterize that?
Because we rate them separately, the difficulty in the past is, do you create job opportunities or do you alleviate health and safety concerns? And we finally came to the conclusion that you can't mesh the two together. You're going to have to rate a project one way or you rate it the other. Certainly with the pressures that we have on the economy right now, it's probably worthwhile to take a look at those projects that do support economic activity and place those communities in better position to serve those businesses.
So essentially that's the first question, and then the scoring takes place in under one of those criteria?
The first question is health or safety,
right,
or job support. And then depending on which direction they go, then they get scored numerically.
Okay, thank you. Representative Whitney, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd heard earlier reference to a temporary licensing, which caused me to sit up and take notice. And in terms of a need, perhaps, to provide temporary licensing, I assume, for contractors when we're looking at all this infrastructure development. And I'm wondering, in terms of sustainability, if a contractor is interested in providing those services, why that contractor wouldn't already be licensed. If we're talking about out-of-state contractors, then how that squares with sustaining our state's workforce, which is fast approaching double-digit unemployment. And if it is strictly in terms of the interest of a stimulus package, then how that sustains our communities.
Chair Reed, Representative Witt, that's a very good statement. And when I talked about the temporary licensing, it's something we're exploring to see if it's a viable alternative. It's not done. You know, and I totally, those are all the things we need to consider, just the things you've brought up. That is this something that needs to be done? And if so, how do we do it, and how does it best benefit Oregonians? I mean, we have to take the opportunity to build this infrastructure, but we have to do it in a proper manner. And if it isn't through that, we've got to figure out another way to do it. But I totally agree with what you're saying there.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
And I think I also thank you for that. I think I also heard what I'm paraphrasing here, and it may not be exactly a fair to paraphrase it, but something reference to an inadequate, possibly an inadequate labor supply. And I'm wondering if in fact I heard that correctly, what crafts we're now anticipating do not have an adequate labor supply.
Representative Reed, Chair Reed, Representative Witt, members of the committee. Our concern is the amount of money and the projects that are come in that we won't have the qualified workforce to complete all of it to expend all those funds. I think we've got a very qualified in the construction industry workforce, but we've never had this opportunity before where this amount of money's come in for this amount of projects that need to be done simultaneously. So that's where our concerns lie. Do you have anything to add to that, Lynn?
No, I don't.
You know, it's I wouldn't want to. I don't want to represent it as an inadequate workforce. Our concerns are in that we don't have a large enough workforce to accommodate.
Any other questions, Representative Bailey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, in these two categories you discussed, economic vitality and health and safety, is it the case that all potential projects are categorized under one of those two categories, or are there potentially projects that don't fit underneath one of those two categories that then are not considered?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bailey, the program I was referring to is our water wastewater program or special public works program. Clearly, the safe drinking water program, but another one, addresses health and safety issues. So, you know, there's no choice there. And that's federal money. Clearly, I think federal money is directed for specific purposes. It's the state-funded programs like the safe drink or the special public works or water wastewater program where we have that flexibility to address the alternate demands.
Okay.
Representative Thatcher?
I just had a question. I think it was Director McCabe that you were mentioning that you went around the state as the commission and met with stakeholders. I'm just wondering who's considered a stakeholder, who participated, how were they invited, and how, I mean, was it just mostly local government agencies or other government agencies and entities, or, you know?
Chair Reed, Representative Thatcher, members of the committee. Representative Benz was at one in Baker City. We went to the locals and said, who in your community has a vested interest in what this agency should look like and how our agency performs? So we asked our local partners to tell us who should be at the table to advise us on what their regions and communities needed. It was not a selective. We, from our standpoint, we invited all economic development professionals that are members of associations throughout the state. We invited community leaders, and then we invited them to tell us who else needed to be at the table.
Follow up to that. The local partners, who would those be?
In Baker City, I'm trying to think of Jennifer. Jennifer Watkins.
It doesn't need to be a name. I'm just wondering, is it department-type folk that are working for the department locally? Or?
Okay, I'm sorry. Representative Reed, Representative Thatcher. There's an organization throughout the state called the Oregon Economic Development Association. That's a group comprised of private sector individuals throughout the state. There's one in Salem called SEDCOR, the Strategic Economic Development Corporation. There's one in Bend called SoReady, Southern Oregon Regional Economic Development, Inc. There's EDCO in Central Oregon. Those are the economic development professionals I'm talking about. We also had members of the ERT team, the Governor's Economic Revitalization Team from the state. We had our business development officers there, our community development officers there, my staff, and then local government partners as well.
Including community colleges.
Including community colleges.
Follow up?
Please.
Did it include any businesses?
Yes. Representative Reed, Representative Thatcher, the businesses are members of the SEDCORs, EDCOs. Those are business organizations. Sorry. Yes, and again, we asked for specific, and we went out to the communities and said, who should be at the table here? You know, most of the questions that we had and most of the conversations when we went out into the communities weren't around business development. They were more around infrastructure and the needs of those communities and the aging infrastructure. Very seldom did we actually get into business discussions when we were on the road. Is that a fair statement?
I believe so.
And do the items that you summarized already represent a pretty comprehensive list of the things that you heard, or were there other notable things that for some reason didn't make your list?
No, our Chair Reed, we went out. The interesting thing was, when I say infrastructure, as we got further out into Eastern Oregon and Baker City, the interesting thing we found was that they weren't asking us for money as much as they were asking for expertise you know, the need for us to help them to determine what their infrastructure needs are and help them develop plans. So what we came up with, this Infrastructure Finance Authority, brings everybody to the table. I'm going to get to your question. Yeah. But what we wanted to do was create something where the stakeholders had a vested interest in its success. Because in the past, the agency put forth our budget. This last time, it was $100 million around the SPWF, to recapitalize the Public Works Fund. And we put, the legislature gave us $21 million. This is a revolving loan fund that's backed by lottery dollars. I think it behooves this department to create a self-sustaining fund. We shouldn't have to come to the legislature once every 2 years and ask for more money. And that's when we talk about creating an asset management system where we start holding these communities, counties, and regions accountable and to create a sustainable working system that we can start keeping this money revolving and moving out through. And we're going to get to that point within the next 5 years. In answer to your question, yes, I don't think we missed anything on what people asked us to do here. I mean, we covered all the bases. When we went to 9 cities, those are the only ones that the public hearings, we talked to businesses, we talked to individuals. You know, we really put a lot of effort into this and then had our commissioners out there doing the same. So we're quite proud, actually, of what we've brought forth.
Mr. Chair, if I could footnote, please, the director's comments. What you've heard presented to you today are those items that take statutory authority. That we heard lots of commentary about how we should tinker with our programs by administrative rule, and we have that authority already. So you'll also see us doing changes to our programs to make them more serviceable. We've convened an advisory group for the Infrastructure Finance Authority already, and we've begun those explorations because we want to begin the process now to modify our programs to be more of more service to the communities and provide for their needs.
That's helpful. Perhaps in a future discussion we can talk about that too.
And Mr. Chair, if I just might chime in really quickly. For example, one thing that we heard from stakeholders and from business folks in particular was to better integrate innovation with our business development strategy, and something that didn't require any statutory change moving forward was to consolidate our business and trade division with our innovation division. And so now we have a synced up and more focused role between the two moving forward. So, for example, that is one thing that we heard on the road that didn't require anything in terms of a recommendation for the commission, but is something that we could implement immediately as a department as we move forward.
Thank you. I think I saw a hand down here. Representative Benson.
Mr. Chairman, the term sustainability, of course, subject to 1,000 definitions and certainly is on the eye of the beholder. The issue has come up in my district that a situation has come up which might present us or you folks with the opportunity to share with us your vision of sustainability. Here's a choice. A local factory employs about 1,000 people, Orida. It needs about $130 million to improve its air discharge and water discharge systems. And we would, by that type of investment, fairly well guarantee, as best one can, about 1,000 jobs into the next 20 years. Alternatively, our community college could use $10 million, could immediately begin to educate, without adding any more staff, additional nurses who could immediately be hired, 20 to 30 jobs. So under your checklist, possibly you could share with us which of those would better warrant our state's attention and maybe the federal government's.
You have 30 seconds.
Chair Reed, Representative Benz, members of the committee. I'm at a loss. Not being disrespectful, but neither of those would fall under our, we don't deal with that. You're talking, on the nurses' side, that comes from the education. So, I mean, I'd be offering a personal opinion if I...
Which I think we'd be happy to hear if you're willing to offer it, as the expert that you are.
Yeah, it's you have to tie these things too. If you're going to educate the nurses, and if we're going to put the money towards them, then we have to put clawbacks, just as we would with the business, that they have to agree to stay there for X amount of years. Those jobs, you know, if you want to guarantee this stuff, then guarantee it. You know, if you say to me that ORIDA, if that kind of money is going to need to be invested and these jobs are going to be here for the next 20 years and it's 1,000 jobs, that's the way I lean. You know, those are, and you tell them to hire Oregonians and you put clawbacks and sideboards around it.
Possibly my question, and you are correct, I wasn't quite sure that the department had the ability to assist in either of these projects. What is interesting to me is just, I don't want to say how little, but how limited the government is when it comes to assisting in some of these situations. Because the jobs appear to be there, but there appear to be a big space of investment between us and those jobs. And that to me seems to be the biggest challenge right now.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, related to your ORIDA scenario, what I didn't hear you describe is whether the company can actually afford that kind of investment. And certainly if the company is having a problem in accessing capital, we can assist in that and possibly even do industrial development bonds to capitalize that $130 million. The question becomes, can they prove the ability to pay it back?
Any further questions? Representative Witt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not so much a question as a comment. And in my district here, a short while ago, we had close to $1.5 billion worth of construction going on at one time. Much of that construction was in power generation. It required the highest level of skill that could be delivered to those job sites. We had one employer in particular from out of state who said absolutely it could not be done. It would be impossible to have that much construction going on simultaneously and to be able to deliver adequately skilled workforce to the job sites. It was done on time, under budget, and that same employer now would like to use Oregon workers in all of its projects nationwide. Mr. Chairman, I volunteer to assist if there's any question whether Oregon has adequate numbers of workers or adequately skilled workers to work with the department to see to it that that stimulus project is done here with Oregon labor, and the stimulus stimulates Oregon's economy.
I appreciate you stepping up, Representative Witt, and I'm glad you're here as your chair of the group as well.
Great.
Other questions? Final comments from you. The motivation for me to ask you to come today was really to help us orient ourselves as we start to take these questions on, and I think you've done a good job of that. I hope that this is not the last time you'll be before us as experts, and as we narrow in on our focus and start dealing with the proposals that are going to come to us, I suspect we'll be looking to you for your guidance and expertise. Any other comments from other committee members or from you?
Well, I'd just like to say on behalf of the department, thank you for giving us this opportunity this early into the session, and we'll be here at your disposal.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Other general discussion from the committee. I think we'll be back to our normal time on Tuesday at 1 o'clock. I think we'll have a group from Eco Northwest who can start to orient us a little bit about some of the economic opportunities and benefits for a region and for a state. And in the meantime, I'd really be eager to talk to you individually or collectively about items that you'd like to see on our agenda, bills that you have that you're working on that you'd like to see come our direction, or anything else, so that we can make this a good collaborative effort. So if there are any other comments from the committee, I think we'll...
Mr. Chair.
Please.
I wanted to be sure that our new members, you know, I was on the list longer, got the book.
They did.
Without costing you more money. And if they did, because I don't think a guy like Representative Bruin, for instance, should be allowed to keep the book.
Well, Representative Bruin, I thank you for the comment, Representative Gillian. Representative Bruin apparently was an overachiever when I called him as the prospective vice chair that I thought he was going to be. He already had the book. said he had heavily annotated it and was planning to bring it to session, so I actually didn't get one for him originally, so I think we're okay. But
right.
I think everyone on the committee has the book. It's not a formal assignment or anything, but I certainly found it entertaining and thought-provoking as I'm working my way through it, so happy to have your comments. And thanks for looking out for the welfare of the entire committee. All right, either. No. Senator Johnson, I appreciate you're here. Did you want to have anything to say to the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, I just missed the show. So. Thank
well,
you.
Well, I hope you'll come back sometime. All right. Well, having exhausted our agenda to take the words of the Revenue Committee Chairman, we are adjourned until Tuesday. Thanks very much.